Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am one of your hosts today, Ursula Rudenberg, together with Greta Anderson. Hello, Greta.
Hello, Ursula, and hello to you, the listener. We are having a pledge drive this week, so we are putting out all the stops in terms of programming as well, hoping to demonstrate how much your community radio station has to offer, which indirectly really expresses how much we in our community have to offer.
And we have some very accomplished community members with us today in the studio. These are members of the Science Olympiad team who represented Ames High School and Ames Middle School. So what is the Science Olympiad? If you don't know, Peg Barber, the Ames Science Olympiad coach, is here to explain. Welcome, Peg.
Thank you very much, Ursula.
It's really great to have you, especially during this week where we're really trying to feature the community more than usual, because it's very exciting to see the station connect more and more with people. So we're very excited about meeting with you guys. Peg taught 8th grade science at Ames Middle School and currently supervises student teachers for Iowa State. Peg, what does that actually mean, supervise student teachers at Iowa State?
When the student teachers are out in the classroom, they have a cooperating teacher who they work with every day. But I go about once every 2 weeks to observe a lesson, offer suggestions. I'm kind of the liaison between the school district, the teacher, and the university.
So a student teacher at Iowa State is somebody who's studying education and is working with a teacher at either the Ames High School or Ames Middle School or grade school?
Right, or many other school districts across Iowa. It's kind of the capstone part of their education program. So usually it happens during the last semester of their senior year.
Like an internship in a way.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so also you are the person who introduced the Science Olympiad. Is that correct?
That is correct.
To the state of Iowa.
Yes.
To the state of Iowa. So why don't we start out with you explaining what is the Science Olympiad for those of us who don't really know fully what it is.
I like to describe Science Olympiad as a track meet for science. When you have a regular track meet, you have a team of students, and then different students participate in different events. Somebody might do the 400, some might do a relay, that kind of thing. Well, with Science Olympiad, we have a team of 15 students, and there are 23 events for Science Olympiad. So each event has usually two students. There's a few that have three. So it ends up that each student on the team is in about three different events.
I think when most of us think about a science competition, it conjures up the image of a science fair where students bring a project that they've worked on and display it. Can you tell us, is that what you're talking about, or is this a more dynamic process that occurs while they're actually at the Olympiad?
I have to say this is nothing like a science fair project. There are different types of events. The events cover all of the disciplines of science. So we have some biology events, some chemistry, some physics, some earth science. And then we have engineering-type events as well. So some of the events involve students actually studying and preparing to take a test. Entomology is one of those events where they have a list of, I can't tell you how many insects that they have to be able to recognize by maybe the class and genus, whatever, and then know information about them, like where they live, are they helpful, are they harmful, those types of things. And then they actually take a lab practical test. Other events are more lab-based. So they might chemistry lab is one where there's a topic for each year, and they actually have to do a lab. And then all of the calculations and analysis that's involved with the lab.
How much of this is known prior to the event itself?
As far as what's going to be on the test,
yes.
They are given rules, and those are kind of the guidelines for that year. And then you kind of go from there and look at all kinds of different topics. There are guidelines from the national about each event, but each test is kind of debatable whether it's part of that event or not. You don't know until you get there for sure.
And where did this happen?
Well, our state competition was on April 18th, and that was at Coe College in Cedar Rapids. Mm-hmm. We had participated in two invitationals prior to that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you for giving us some background. We are going to have we have some fresh young faces in the studio with us to talk about what they did at the Olympiads. But before we do that, I just wanted to ask you real briefly, Peg, why did you introduce the Olympiads to Iowa?
I got involved with Science Olympiad when I was teaching in Ohio about 23 years ago. Oh, no, 28 years ago. And I did it in Ohio for 5 years, and I was so excited by what the students accomplished in Science Olympiad, because these events are not necessarily what they're learning in school. It pushes them beyond that. The middle school is more at a high school level, and the high school is more at a college level. And so the students are really pushed. And so I fell in love with Science Olympiad. And when I moved to Iowa, I said, oh, I want to have a Science Olympiad team. And they didn't have Science Olympiad in Iowa. So I started it.
How does one start something like this?
Well, I didn't know very many people, so I just contacted science teachers in neighboring school districts and said, hey, I've got this really neat program, and I'd like to get it started. And we had a few meetings, and that's how it started. I learned a lot, and I met a lot of people that way.
Do you have to do a lot of coordinating throughout the year as the organizer, or is there some sort of team now that organizes this?
I handed that off to Coe College.
Oh, so Coe College is now the host, and so
right.
They actually organize it too.
Right.
And Coe College is in?
Cedar Rapids.
Cedar Rapids.
Right.
Okay. Thank you. Well, that's very, very interesting what gets started, and it has really grown. It's been going on now for how many years?
23 years.
23 mm-hmm. years. And from what I understand, the Ames team does pretty well, right?
We have done very well. The middle school has had a team for 23 years, and they've won state all but three of those years. And then when some of those middle school students went up to the high school, they wanted to continue, so they talked me into that. And they've been doing that for 22 years, and they've won state every year.
That's really awesome. And we do have some of those people in the studio right now, so really can't wait to find out what is the secret to their success. And Greta?
If I may, Ursula, this story reminds me a little bit of the KHOI story. We have someone who was very involved in something in another state, another place, like you, Ursula, and came to Iowa and said, we need this here. Or in this case,
you're right.
We came to Ames and said, we need this here. It's such an important part of a community interaction.
Right. And I think it was for a very similar reason, because I saw how much the community radio brings out in people and helps them develop. So
right.
You're right. There's a very similar type of impulse. And hopefully we will have the kind of success that the Olympiads have had. It's a really beautiful story to hear how this has blossomed. And Greta, I think that I want to take a moment to talk about KHOI, if you guys don't mind. We are in a pitch week. And I was thinking that since we are among scientists, that I wanted to talk a little bit about what makes community radio happen. It's before I got involved with community, Greta said I was the person that brought it here. But, you know, 20 years ago, I didn't know anything about radio. I was a painter by profession, actually. And for me, listening to the radio meant turning a knob on a dial, turning a machine on, and the radio was there. That's what radio was. And I think most of us, that's what our experience is with radio.
With a lot of other technology.
Yeah, I had no clue what was happening to actually make that sound come out. It was just a button I pushed. Well, I've had to build a radio station now. So, you know, just since we're talking science, let's just talk for a minute. Let's reel the tape backwards and go from that button. What happens? What happened before the button went on? Well, you had electromagnetic airwaves, which were carrying a signal, which connected with an antenna on your radio somewhere and was translated into something that we perceive as sound. Before that happened, there was no sound. There were just electromagnetic airwaves. I actually used to think they were airwaves. But my father's a scientist made it clear to me that they're not airwaves, they're electromagnetic waves, which explains why radio can go into outer space, because there's no air in outer space. But there are electromagnetic waves. Okay, so you back up from the electromagnetic waves, you come to an antenna on a tower, which in our case is out by Story City. And we pay rent on that tower. And then from the tower, the airwaves, it's getting pushed out by the antenna. Well, it gets to the antenna by going up a cable made of copper, which is also very expensive, and that cable goes down to our transmitter. And the transmitter is pumping that sound up into the antenna. And then before the transmitter gets the sound, there's another cable that's going down the tower, the same tower. And sound is coming down that cable, and that sound was received by another antenna on the same tower, which was receiving signals from another antenna, which is out by the country club, which is received by another antenna, which is on the Doughboy grain elevator in Ontario. And then that's a signal which is received by internet through fiber optic, which is coming from the top of Sheldon Mon Hotel. And then that signal is going by wireless internet from Sheldon Mon to an antenna on top of the Ames Pantorium where we are. And then that is going down some wire, which comes here into the studio and is connected to that blue box right over there called the tie line. And that's connected to the board that Greta's running, which is connected to my microphone. So that is all of the technology that is actually making that little button transmit sound. And all of that costs a lot of money. It costs us about $7,000 a month to actually do all that. And that is why we come to you every half year and ask you to support community radio, because all of that stuff has to happen for that one simple little action to happen, which is to push that button, which I push in the morning and hear a radio station. And so we are asking you, the listener, to partner up with us and help us make all those machines do what they're doing. Because most of what the work is done around here is volunteer. We have one employee, Rick here, who is very, very helpful. But everybody else does this for free. But the machines do cost money. The tower costs rent. The station costs rent, the building. And so we are asking you to help us out and take out a membership with KHOI.
And you talked about the tower. The tower itself has two wires.
Yes.
One of them is...
One goes up and one goes down.
One goes up, one goes down. One gives, one receives.
Yes.
And this is the concept of reciprocity that we want to cultivate in our community.
Absolutely.
We give and we give and we give every day. We come wake up early to get on the air and deliver you good content. And now we hope to just receive, you know, enough to keep us...
Yeah.
Going.
$55 is a membership to KHOI, and if you already are a member, please give more. And the number is 292-2878, 515-292-2878 if you're listening online. And our website also, khoifm.org, there's a donate button, so you don't have to call us if you don't want to talk to us, although we're very nice. I don't know who's out there right now, but they're all very nice.
That is true. And I think it's Anna.
That's right, Anna.
A high school student.
A high school student who has a radio show on KHOI.
That's right.
And or just come down. A lot of people enjoy just coming down and bringing a check.
And it's not too late. We're here. There's going to be people here all through the night,
that's
evening.
That's right.
And if you give $100, and if you haven't eaten dinner yet, and you give $100, you can get a gift certificate for $20 to the Pizza Dough and Sauce Company. Do we still have that?
I think we do. It looks like we still have it.
So this is a plan, folks.
It's the Great Plains Pizza.
Great Plains Pizza and Dough Sauce and Company is in there, too. And so you give $100. You get all the credit for giving $100. And yet you get a free meal out of the deal. And it just their pizzas, I think, are pretty good.
So. Yeah, and thank you to Great Plains for supporting community radio.
So why don't we...
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg. I'm hosting this show together with Greta Anderson, who's also running the board today. And since this is Pledge Week Drive, we are bringing more guests to the air than usual, just to demonstrate how much of this community has to discover. And we're speaking with members of our ambitious and successful Science Olympiad team from the Ames Middle School and Ames High School. Their coach and founder of the team, Peg Barber, has been explaining a bit of the background of this competitive event for science students, which is compared to a track meet for science students. And we're also lucky enough to have some of the student contestants with us as well. So welcome to the studio, Brianna Barge.
Brenna
Bargefield?
Bargefield. Yeah.
Bargefield. Okay, let me try that again. Brenna Bargefield.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Brenna. And Nathan Chen?
Mm-hmm. Hi. Yep, I'm Nathan.
Hi, Nathan. And we have Amy Yang?
Hi.
Hi, Amy. Welcome. And Caleb Kong?
Yes, I'm here as well.
Okay, and we have a parent who's sitting in the background on the couch and he's taking a back seat tonight. So welcome as well. It's really great to have all of you here in the studio. Before we start to hear about your specific projects, can you help us picture a little bit what this looks like? When you're at this event, is it a one-day event, a two-day event?
So the competition is a full-day event. And so what that means is we show up at the middle school a day or two ahead of time to pack all of our supplies. So that can mean packing the building devices like the air trajectories that shoot projectiles a certain distance, or making sure that the lab events are going to have their apron and their goggles, because you wouldn't want to get disqualified for a safety hazard. Making sure people have their study materials and all their notes and calculators so that everything is ready to go at 5 a.m. the morning of the competition.
Wow, 5 a.m. Okay. And then at 5 a.m. you drive?
5 a.m. we drive. We try and sleep. Doesn't always happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then the first event
feeling pretty excited, right?
Yeah.
And you sound like you've done this more than once.
Yes. This is my fifth year with Science Olympiad.
Wow. Okay, so then you get to Coe College, and is this one room or a bunch of different rooms? It's a whole building, or what is it?
The first thing we do when we get to Coe College is we unload the bus and we take everything to the team room. The team room is where we have our home base. Both high school and middle school share the room, and it's where you go between your events, and it's where we meet before the award ceremony. So you go there. The people who have the first hour event to get their wristbands on first, they gather their materials and they head into another building very close by or very far away if it's a building event in the gym, and then they do their event.
And at the event, there's a judge. By the way, this is Brianna speaking.
Yeah.
And then there's various judges at the events. There's people who are testing you.
Yeah. That depends on the event type. I'm going to start with experimental design because Nathan Chen is also on that, so he can jump in with info.
Nathan, why don't you describe experimental design?
Well, in experimental design, we actually it's a three-person event, unlike most other events, which are two people. And so in experimental design, we are given actually a whole pile of stuff. You can just say an assortment of just random household items like rubber bands, springs, paper clips, pencils, Mentos, maybe styrofoam cups. And then we are given 50 minutes to design an experiment using however many items we want. Then write it up, conduct it, write it up, and draw up a conclusion. And clean up. And we are graded on using a rubric on how well we followed the Science Olympiad's rules for experimental design.
Now, is this something that you practice beforehand, or are you just completely improvising?
Yeah, we practice with different scenarios. We are given several different groups or different types of items that we just practice over and over every week. Sometimes we get the same ones. We practice again, try to improve. Sometimes if we go to competition, we might even get something that we've already practiced before. So it's just a walk in the park. We get it done fast, and we get it done well.
So you nervous when you do this?
Not usually at state. At state,
you're focused.
Not usually, yeah.
You're
so
focused by then.
Well, can I ask what you actually did, what experiment you put together this year?
This year, we were given 3 metal cans of assorted sizes, a lump of clay, string, scissors, tape, a birthday candle, but no matches or lighters, and a spring. And we were given the topic because the event supervisor may choose to do that. And it was supposed to be about mass and or weight. So we made like a harness out of the can, the tape, and the string, and we suspended that on one end of the spring, and then we added different amounts of clay measured in the very, very technical term of lumps, and then we measured how far the spring stretched given the different lumps.
How many different teams were doing this at the same time?
In the same room? What would you think? 10?
Probably around 10, yes. Mm-hmm.
And was there a big variety in what people ended up doing?
We couldn't really. We were at a table by ourselves. There were some tables that had 2 teams sharing the lab station, each with their own set of materials, but for some reason, we were just lucky enough to be on our own.
So you didn't really see what the others did.
We were
did.
A little too focused this year. we didn't really notice.
Yeah. That's excellent.
Did anybody use the birthday can? I mean, can you imagine a use of the birthday
can? Not sure.
You think that was just a red herring?
Maybe they could have cut it with the scissors to different sizes.
Oh, okay. Good point. An object that you have to reconceptualize is a different sort of use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just want to add in that they took a first place on their experimental design this year, and they have gone to national. If we win state, which we've done, it qualifies us for national. And so at the national competition, they have gotten medals in experimental design the last 2 years.
I've medaled twice in the event, and then Nathan was not on the event the year before, well, my first year medaling, but he was last year. So between the two of us, we have 3 national medals.
Yeah. And we try to add some of the younger students into the experimental design so that we can keep this focus going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it gets passed from generation to generation or from student to student. Is it really fun doing this?
I'd have to say I have 2 events that I consider my babies, disease detectives and experimental design. And experimental is, I'd say it's the most engaging at the competition because of the group camaraderie and the fact that it is so improvised.
Mm-hmm.
Nathan.
Definitely experimental design is probably my favorite event. Well, partially due to the fact that we have to improvise every time, and we don't really have to prepare outside of practices, and also because we have a really good team put together in recent years, so mm-hmm. it's been really good experience.
You have to be think quick on your feet.
Definitely.
Yeah.
You don't have much time to just waste and, I don't know, maybe get into a daze and think about what life.
Yeah, if you spend more than 5 minutes planning at the beginning, you're out.
You have to really learn how to talk to each other collaboratively so that you can arrive at a plan very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
How long do you have?
For the event?
Yeah, to put something together.
50 minutes.
So you have to... By the first 15 minutes, you really have to have...
By the first five, you need to have your game plan.
There it is, yeah. So that's a really advanced collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
We should have you guys come down and work on the radio station. We're all about collaboration here. You look sound like the experts.
It'd be a good opportunity.
Yeah, and do a science show. Okay, well, Caleb, why don't you tell us what you did in the competition?
I participated in the meteorology event and simple machines and also elastic launch glider.
Okay. Which one would you like to describe? Which was your favorite of those?
My favorite event was probably meteorology. I've done that for the past 3 years I've been on the team. And it's just about weather. There are different topics for 3 years and they cycle over. And then, so this year's focus was climate change and, like, how it evolved over time. And I just found that pretty interesting because I like the evolution of the Earth and that kind of thing.
So is this more of a quiz format where they present information and you have to fill in the blank sort of idea? Or?
Yeah. This is a test-taking event, and they give you guidelines before about certain areas that you have to study for because they say that those will be on the test. But this year's test was a lot easier than last year since it was all multiple choice, so that helped us out.
No essays, huh?
No essays.
Is this verbal? Is this kind of like a spelling bee where you stand up in front, or do you sit down and take a written test?
No, yeah, you sit down and take a written test. My partner is actually Amy Yang. She's also here.
Hi.
Hi, Amy. Hi.
So, yeah, we just did meteorology together. We did it last year as well, but I feel like the focus last year wasn't as strong as this year. We did a lot of work for climate. We had a couple of very generous IC students that come in to help us practice, and they're very good at teaching. And I would definitely say that learning from Science Olympiad, learning about some of the topics they have really interests you. I learned a lot about climate change, and that really influenced me to do more projects about it in science classes, research more about it just out of Science Olympiad.
Can you give us an example of one thing about climate change that you discovered that you really didn't know about?
I think we both can say, like, volcanic particulate. A long time ago, when Mary Shelley wrote Frankenstein, a couple of very famous authors like Lord Byron, they all got together at someone's cabin, just a bunch of famous writers, and they wrote really sad and scary stories because of the weather. The weather, it was summer, but it was freezing and it was cold.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's right.
Because of the volcanic particulate, mm-hmm. it just, there was no summer that year and mm-hmm. it was just, there was no sun.
That's right.
That's so interesting because I just read, I mean, there's been a lot of volcanic eruptions just in the last few days and week. So mm-hmm. the people are saying, oh, you know, this is the answer to climate change. Yeah. Not really, but
I've heard about that event. So you're saying that precipitated the writing of Frankenstein?
The mood of the climate completely changed their moods. I mean, if mm-hmm. it's dreary outside, you're going to be kind of sad and melancholy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's very interesting.
I think that was in the 1830s, mm-hmm. roughly.
So what kind of question did they ask on this test? Give us an example of a kind of a question you get.
On this test?
Yes.
Which of the following were not in Earth's very first atmosphere? And they gave us four choices, one of them being ammonia, which we chose and was not the correct answer.
Yeah.
Even though we
what
thought.
What were the others?
Methane?
Yeah.
Methane? And
oxygen?
It carbon was dioxide. Less oxygen and more carbon dioxide.
Huh. So what's the answer?
Oxygen.
Oxygen?
Maybe.
Was not in the Earth's atmosphere originally?
Mm-mm. It didn't start to accumulate until the presence of photosynthesis in the green bacteria.
There it is.
Great stuff.
I've just learned something.
And so you consult with each other on this test? You,
Yeah.
You're able to chat with each other?
Give us another example. I'm fascinated by what I don't know. That's give us another question that they asked you about.
How does the feedback variation affect climate or something?
And there's ones like there's a graph, like a there's a lot of climatograph climate.
Yeah, I don't think we had one on this test, but there are a lot of like pictures showing El Niño and La Niña, like certain ocean currents that really affect the South Americans.
And then there were some pictures asking about what it was a picture of like the grass and stuff about albedo.
Yeah, and we kind of got stumped on that one.
Yeah,
but albedo is basically how reflective something is, and white, or like a mirror, I guess, would have the highest albedo, while something black would have the lowest albedo. And it was a picture, there were like white sands. There are certain areas. One of them was white sands, one was a forest, and then there was also a certain old lava flow section. And we had to identify which vegetated areas, and that specifically got us really confused.
Yeah.
But, and yeah, which vegetated areas had the highest albedo. And we think that the picture was inverted in colors because that really threw us off. Because at first we thought it must have been this thing. But then after we reread the question a couple times, we realized that it had to be something else.
Wow. Okay.
So we should let listeners know that we're talking about the Science Olympiad. That's
the track event for science students.
Right. They hold these Olympiads on a state level, and then the winners go on to nationals. And so many people in this room have been to nationals because our Ames team is so successful at state. And we have with us Peg Barber, who actually got this thing going here in Iowa. And I'm curious, when do you guys meet to practice? Is this how often, and what's that like?
We practice 3 times a week. Tuesday and Thursday evenings from 6:30 to 8:30, and then Sunday afternoons from 1 to 3. Each event practices an hour per week with us. And then hopefully they do something outside of the practice time, because there's so much to learn that they just can't possibly do it all in 1 hour a week. But we have formal practices Tuesday, Thursday evening, and Sunday afternoons.
Wow. So you all get to know each other pretty well with all this practicing. Do you get to know the students that come from other schools? I presumably some of them repeat as well.
We made some pretty good friends in Johnston.
Definitely. Last year was my first year doing Science Olympiad. And my friends, she lives in Georgia, and I have friends who live all over the country that have participated in Science Olympiad. So I figured, at the state competition, maybe I can make some friends if I see some people. And everyone at Science Olympiad is pretty friendly. It's really easy just to, like, talk to somebody if you're walking to an event. I've made countless friends. And last year, I met a bunch of people from Johnston. Me and Caleb and I saw them again this year. And we don't just talk at Science Olympiad. I mean, we still talk. We have each other's Facebooks, our, like, social media. We definitely talk a lot. And even our friends at the Ames Invitational came to see them, the ones that weren't even in Science Olympiad. It's definitely the friends you make in Science Olympiad, and even just on your team, the bonding you have, it's just great. It's amazing. It's an amazing experience.
You're really sharing a love of the natural world together. Yeah, I have to ask this question. Greta said earlier that this is a very successful team in Ames. In fact, as was said earlier, the Ames team, the middle school team, in 23 years has won 20 times, and the Ames high school team has won every year. So I've got to ask you, don't they kind of hate you by now? I mean, don't they feel kind of like we don't want to show up and get beat again?
Oh, there are a lot of teams like that. You don't know how many. We don't even know how many.
Yeah. It was my very first year on the team. So I was in middle school the first of the three times that they did not win. So there's definitely some side-eyeing at that team that goes on, and a little walking behind the halls like, oh, you're the team that beat us.
There they go. Those are the Ames people.
But, you know, that doesn't mean that after one of my events last year, that didn't mean that I couldn't sit down with one of the girls who was on the same event on that team that beat us, mm-hmm. and have a nice chat with her while we waited for the event to finish.
So you're the team to beat?
Yes.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And they keep showing up to beat you, or to try?
They tried. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so far they've only been successful at the middle school level, mm-hmm. but they've also only sent a high school team the last 2 years. So,
well, the team that beats you is the greatest teacher. But why do you think you keep winning?
Because of our coach.
Ah, there it is. That's wonderful.
And my cousin was actually on Science Olympiad for a couple of years before I was, and he was up in Gilbert. And so we talked a lot about how our teams practice differently. And with him, for his event, there was no real scheduled time. They didn't have to show up necessarily all the time, and I don't know what the coaching style was like, but I do know that what we have is very good. And
what is it about Peg that makes her so good?
She will hammer it into us to get practicing. And, you know, she'll let us go by our own devices for a little bit, but she also knows that, you know, letting kids do what they want for 2 hours with their friends, that can devolve. And so she knows how to get us back on track, and she knows how to motivate us, because we don't want the other team to beat us again.
Mm-hmm. So she sets a high bar.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we have one of the longest streaks in the nation, I think.
We may be the longest now.
We are the longest high school team winning streak at state in the nation. And so pretty much, I mean, we don't want it to be broken now, do we?
So it's pressure.
Yeah, we definitely don't want to.
Okay, well, I have a confession to make to you guys. Oh, wait a minute. Peg has something to say after all this.
Well, one of the really exciting things that's happened for me is that the team that finished second at the middle school, second to us, is coached by one of my former student teachers. And the team that finished second at the high school is coached by another one of my former student teachers. So they were with me, and they experienced Science Olympiad, and now they're going out and mm-hmm. keep it moving.
Keep it moving, yeah. Well, we're going to take a short musical break, but before we do that, I got to tell you my confession. I got to tell you, when I was about 5 years old, there was this book. I don't know if you've ever seen this book. It's called The World We Live In. Those of us over a certain age know that book. It was put out by Life magazine. And it's very beautiful picture book, and it shows these demonstrations of the beginning of the world. And it shows the volcanic eruptions and lava that were with, in that book says was related to killing off the dinosaurs. And I saw that, and it made a big impression on me. And I was living in Ames, Iowa, and I became terrified that a volcanic eruption was going to happen here in Ames, Iowa. And I walked around for years worrying about a volcanic eruption in Ames, Iowa.
It didn't happen.
Not yet.
But we do have a meteor strike in Iowa, right. Yeah. Somewhere.
Okay, let's take a music break, and then we'll come back and hear a little bit more about the Science Olympiads.
Iowa, it's a beautiful name when you say it like we say it back home. It's a robin in the willow. It's a postmaster's friendly hello. It's a promise for tomorrow and a memory of long, long ago. Iowa, what a beautiful name. When you say it like we say it back home, yes, sir.
And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we are talking about stories and people and events in Central Iowa. And today we are here with Peg Barber and Brina Bargefeld, and Nathan Chen and Amy Yang and Caleb Kong. And these are the folks that are from Ames Middle School and Ames High School who just recently came back victorious from the Olympiads, the Science Olympiads, which are held at Coe College. Peg Barber is their coach, and she's also founder of the Iowa Olympiads. And Ames does real well. In fact, they're practically undefeated. The high school is undefeated, and the middle school has only lost 3 times out of 23 years. Formidable track record. And we just before the break, we were talking about the pressure that puts on everybody to keep up a very high standard, which is a very exciting thing to do, is to feel part of something that has a level of excellence. And we're very, very happy that you can come in today and tell us about what you did.
And that, sounds a lot like KHOI Radio.
It does.
We put a lot of pressure on ourselves to achieve a certain standard so that the listener will continue to listen.
And I have to say, we've been pitching now for about 4 days, and we'll be pitching for the rest of the week. And I'm just knocked out by the level of effort and love and care that everybody associated with the station has shown in the last few days. Everybody is really pouring their heart out and trying to articulate as best they can why community radio is such a valuable thing to them and to the community. And it's interesting, we have this list of 10 top reasons why people don't donate. And the top reason is because they are not asked. And it has been difficult for folks at KHOI to learn how to ask for money. It's something that people feel inhibited about at first. And yet we know that if you really care about this station, you want us to ask. You want us to tell you that you are needed as well, that we're not doing this without you. We're not some sort of in club who, in crowd who just hangs out with each other and doesn't want other people to be involved. We desperately want you to be listening to us. We desperately want you to be participating and to support the station, because there is nothing else supporting the station. It's being supported completely by those of you who listen and feel like, yes, this community wants to sustain a community radio station. This is something we want to have in our community so that we can hear the incredible stories and information like what we're hearing today with these brilliant young people who are teaching me a few things. I didn't know that oxygen is a relatively new phenomenon on this planet based on photosynthesis. I didn't know that.
And we had recordings of high school students from Ames on earlier
this morning,
another collaborative project that we did with the KHOI did with the Ames High School to introduce ideas about storytelling and interviewing skills, and they took an assignment to interview an elder to another level by making radio recordings, and now they're going to be aired, and we aired some of them this morning.
That's
so
right.
That's something that no other radio station can give you.
Right, it has the time and the interest.
Right.
Yes. So the number that we'd like you to call is 292-2878, 515-292-2878. Anna is sitting in front. Anna herself is a high school student. She just started a radio show two weeks ago. She's has a brand new show called Plastic Jams, and it is on, let me think real quick, it's on Saturday at 8 o'clock, at 7 o'clock. It's on Saturday at 7 o'clock. That's Anna. She's from. She's a senior at Ames High School.
I believe she was in Joe Brecky's class.
That's right. She was.
Joe Brecky was the teacher who
did the stories.
Did Story County Story Project.
Thank you, Joe.
Yep.
And now Anna's sitting at the front desk. She's doing her volunteer stint. And if you call 292-2878, say to her, please, Anna, I want to donate to KHOI. And congratulations for having a radio show. That's 292-2878. That's 515-292-2878. Or if you don't want to speak with anybody, we are at khoyfm.org. khoyfm.org. There's a donate button, and you can donate there. Or just come on down. Come on down right now and see these really incredible young people that are sitting here listening to us while we pitch and are preparing to tell us more about science, which I'm really excited about getting back to. So let's hear a few more things. I'm curious to hear about another event at the fair. What did it involve? Can you tell us about one more?
Yeah, sure. Elastic Launch Glider is one of them.
All right, tell us about that.
So you have a glider that has to be launched by a rubber band, and once you launch it, the objective is to have the longest flight time, and this needs to be achieved by building the lightest available glider that you can make it, but there are specific parameters that you have to meet, and you want it to have the most amount of lift that you can have.
And how big is the glider?
The wingspan can't be past 32 centimeters, and it has to be longer than 32, I believe.
And what is the glider made out of?
The glider can be made of, I believe, anything. There are a few restrictions. I believe you can't have any pre-glued joints or anything of the sort, but other than that, I think it's open.
So this is something you bring to the competition, something that you've assembled beforehand?
Yes.
Now, does the actual room you're in, does that affect the glider at all, or are you out in the field, or how does this work with the actual glider?
Well, it's in a gymnasium, and then it's relatively high ceiling, but the air currents can really affect it if they're still going while the glider is being launched.
So do you make adjustments when you're there?
It depends. Like, sometimes there's something called stalling. It's when the plane, on its descent, the nose goes up. That means you need to add a little bit of counterweight to the nose, just a tiny bit. Like, if you add too much, like just even the tiniest fraction too much, then it'll completely throw your plane off, and you might even lose more time.
And how do you create a counterweight?
Well, like in the glider that my partner and I have, there's a little place in the tip. There's like a little hole that we designed so that we could place clay in there as needed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what did you make your glider out of?
In this case, there is a styrofoam back part and mainly balsa wood as the wings and the fuselage itself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 22 feet. The ceiling at Ames Middle School is 22 feet. And that's pretty low, actually. And we actually managed to get our glider stuck a couple of times up there at the ceiling. And we're looking for a higher ceiling to practice, about 40 feet or higher, maybe. So if anyone knows about that and could contact us about that.
You need a building with a ceiling higher than what?
40 feet or higher.
That'd 40 be feet or higher. And so if you are listening and you have a building with a ceiling 40 feet or higher, if you run the armory, please contact Peg Barber. Okay. And how do they actually contact you? Do you have an email address that somebody could contact?
I do. My email is peg.barber, and that's B-A-R-B-O-U-R, @gmail.com.
Okay.
Peg.barber, B-A-U-B-A-R-B-O-U-R, is looking for a building with a 40-foot high ceiling. And I assume a relatively large room, right?
Right.
Yeah. So that folks can practice their gliders.
Yeah.
So how did your glider do?
It went pretty well, but there was a little bit of stalling that I mentioned earlier, and that cost us about 3 or 4 seconds. So our longest time, I think, was about 19 seconds. So that was really good. But we're looking to improve by about maybe 10 more seconds at the national competition.
What was the winning amount of time?
We actually got first place.
So 19 seconds was the longest.
Yes, it's actually accumulated time. You have 5 official flights that you can make, and the top 3 flights are the ones that are added together, and you want the highest time.
What was an example of a low time?
A low time? I think about 2 or 3 seconds.
Ooh.
I saw.
Oh.
Yeah.
So they kind of didn't really get that far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just have to say this is just such a stunning example of the drive for excellence. I mean, a 20-foot ceiling isn't good enough. We've got to get a 40-foot ceiling. And first place in Iowa is not good enough. We need to improve on our times. I'm just really impressed by you folks.
All right. We have a little bit more time. Can we hear about one more test? Amy?
My event, actually, one of them is called Picture This, and it's quite different from the other events that are all studying and testing.
And this is Amy Yang speaking.
This is Amy Yang. Have any of you guys played Pictionary before? That's pretty much exactly like how our game is, except it's not on a board game. We have my partners, Maria Kozakova and James Lin. One of them is actually like my best friend, so it's pretty easy for us.
So what happens?
You have a list of words that you don't know what the words are, and the person who is judging you shows one person the word, and then you draw it, and you try to get your other teammates to guess it. And it's just really fun. It's pretty different than all the other events, and it's really cool.
Give us an example of some of the words.
So for us, we've practiced with all sorts of different words. We normally use just a science word dictionary. At States, some of the words, we got experimental design for one of them.
Experimental design was a word?
Yeah, we didn't know how to draw that one. Some of them are words that we have, like, since me and my best friend and I are doing it, we have, like, we know how to draw it for each other to think about how we would do it. One of them, we have like a huge joke just from like personal connections.
What's the word?
Mineral. And
what's the joke?
We've seen a picture online. Yeah, a meme. And so we both knew the picture. And when I got the word was actually like mineral something. I don't remember what the second part was, but I think it was something in the periodic table of elements. So I drew that. And then for mineral, I just drew the picture that we have seen before, and we easily got that. And then for the periodic table of elements, last year we memorized the periodic table of elements song. So whenever we have a word that involves the elements or the periodic table of elements, we pretty much just sing the whole song, and we can get it pretty easily.
And so how do you know which element it is?
Sometimes we'll, like, circle inside where we think it is, but both of us aren't very familiar with the periodic table, so normally we get it way off.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes if it's, like, halogen, that's not exactly a word in the periodic table of elements. It's not element, I mean. But in our song, it's in the chorus. So we'll circle the whole, we'll draw the little periodic table, and we'll circle the whole thing, and we'll note something from the chorus.
Okay.
Yeah.
I understood that.
Or it's on the right-hand side of the
Okay, Brenna?
So I'm a senior at Ames High, mm-hmm. and I mentioned earlier that experimental is one of my event babies, but the other one is disease detectives.
Okay. What's that?
It's sponsored by the CDC.
The CDC is what?
Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Okay. And it's sort of an intro to epidemiology, which is the study of diseases and populations. So when there was Ebola, there's still Ebola, but when their panic was about that, CDC sent epidemiological intelligence services officers into the affected countries to manage that. They've been working to contain the measles outbreak from California. And disease detectives is an introduction to that sort of work.
So what kind of questions are you asked?
Well, the topic changes every 2 years. So it was foodborne my first 2 years. Then the last 2 years it was environmental health, and this year it's focused on population growth. So one of them may be how would the presence of a factory affect the health of a population based off of environmental health concerns? So you could talk about the heavy metals in the water and how that could affect growth. Or more commonly, you're given a scenario where they tell you about an outbreak and some information that's been gathered, and then they'll give you a table of all sorts of things. So let's say there's a foodborne outbreak, and you're given a list of all the foods people ate and the ones they didn't eat, and then of the people who ate this, how many became sick, and of the people who ate it, how many did not get sick. You perform calculations from that to figure out what food was actually causing the illness. And there's a joke with a lot of people who have been on the event before, how it's always the potato salad. So, and at State this year, it was again overwhelmingly the potato salad.
The potato salad. Okay, well, yeah. we have 1 minute to go. So just to mention, Peg, you are going now to the Nationals.
That's correct. We are going to the Nationals, which this year is at University of Nebraska in Lincoln. And that will be May 14th to the 17th.
Okay. Well, best of luck to you, and it's been such a pleasure to have you here today. I think if you were in the room with us, those of you who are listening, you would see that these young people really epitomize the statement of bright-eyed. It's just been a real pleasure, and you've been listening to Local Talk today. I've been Ursula Rudenberg, hosting the show with Greta Anderson. And since this is a pledge drive, we've had lots of guests in the studio demonstrating the value of community radio. And these folks are Ames High School students and Ames Middle School students who competed in the Science Olympiads this year, together with their coach, Peg Barber. We've been speaking to Brenna Bargefeld, Nathan Chen, Amy Yang, and Caleb Kong. Local Chalk was engineered today by Greta Anderson, with help from Richard Morrison. Music you heard was by Jacks of Harmony, and as always, our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their ballad, the CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You can also listen to this show online at khoifm.org, where you can also donate to KHOI. And Local Talk is a radio production training workshop. If you'd like to join the team as a reporter, as a science reporter, folks, contact us at 292-2878, 292-2878. And please remember that your participation as our audience is absolutely what makes KHOI possible. We thank you ever so much for listening, sharing the excitement of our community, and also for donating to KHOI and supporting community radio. And we will see you again on the radio.